Listeners, this is Express Radio 90.3 FM on the frequency modulation band in your program Media and Society. As usual, with me to discuss on today's topic is Professor Abdallah Uba Adamu. Professor, you are welcome to an interesting package of Media and Society.
Thank you very much.
In the previous episode, that is the program we discussed on the role of media in promoting democracy, we have so many questions. One of such questions reads as follows. He says, "Sir, you are an educationist originally. What attracted you to plunk into media and cultural communication, and what is the secret of your success in the new chosen field?"
Well, first of all, every education is a media person. Every education is, because education is a media process. The process of education is a process of communicating a particular message to a particular individual at a particular time. So when you teach, you are actually communicating a series of concepts or competences to a group of students. And you don't know where the knowledge will end up. Every teacher will tell you that years and years after he has finished a particular school, or teaching in a particular school, he often meets somebody who will stop him in the street and say, "Good morning, sir," or "Good afternoon, sir." And the teacher will look at him and say, "Good afternoon, do I know you?" And that person will say, "I'm not sure whether you remember me, sir, but I was your student." And this is one of the joys that teachers always receive in their lives, to see somebody on the road, to be greeted, to be acknowledged, and to be reminded that you have taught somebody some time ago. That is mass communication. Mass communication means communicating to a large number of people. So when you teach somebody in a classroom and he goes and teach another person, who goes and teach another person, it spreads. So do not get the impression that teachers are not mass communicators. They are mass communicators because they communicate over a very large period of time, large area, and for a huge number of people. So technically speaking, every educator is a mass communicator, as far as the definition of mass media is concerned. But the social understanding of mass media is probably what your correspondent is trying to find out.
Yeah.
So let me see if I can explain to him,
yeah,
and to those who have asked similar questions. I started teaching as a graduate assistant in the Department of Education, Bayero University, Kano, in July 1980, yes, after I finished my university studies and finished my NYSC. I was the first person the university employed in the teaching of science education, because I read biology education and physiology. So I started teaching as a science educationist, and my main focus at that particular time was looking at how children could be taught science. And science is not just a question of the subject, but a question of the methodology.
The method
science
of
is
teaching.
More than just, no, not just method of teaching,
okay,
but the methods of science. Science is not a collection of facts. Just because you remember all those formulas and facts does not make you a scientist. A scientist is a person who follows the method of a scientific methodology. And that was my job, to teach young undergraduate students scientific methodology, so that they can now go and teach science effectively to their own students in secondary schools. And to me, science was something that I believed in. Demand for verification, falsification of knowledge, conjectures and reputation, all these are the attributes of science that are very, very critical to me as a person. So, and I enjoyed it. So I was teaching science education. So the fundamental engine of science education was investigative methodology, how to investigate, how to uncover, how to carry out an experiment, and how to correlate between a particular statement of the problem and a particular issue. And that's what we were doing in the Department of Education, Bayero University, in those years. And that's what I've been doing. And
by implication, we can say you are a science-based student.
I am a science-based student. I still am a science-based student, because I was a science student in secondary school. And when I got to ABU to study, I studied BSc Education, Biology and Physiology, which means I was a biology and physiology teacher. I love physiology, absolutely amazing. I like seeing how all those liquids and forces move through the human body and show plants and so on.
Before you proceed, people see biology as the subject that is more of a females, for instance. What interests you to go and study maybe biology and physiology?
It's not so much an a female subject, but a study of life, a study of nature, rhythms of life, rhythms of nature, how nature rhymes. When you look at how ants, for instance, organize themselves, the road and the highways they make, and the way they pick up things and store them, it's just amazing. When you look at the bees, the way they create the honeycomb, the way they have a well-organized social structure, that has nothing to do with femininity. It's just simply an appreciation of God's wonderful creation. In fact, the more scientists you are, the more scientific you study, the more your faith becomes strengthened. Because you know there has to be some master plan behind all this.
So what I mean from the historical background of your life, for instance, while you are young, you love anything, communication, music, and so on and so forth. But all of a sudden, for instance, you
but
change
I was getting
into,
to that. Mm, I was getting to that. Mm, first of all, he said you are in education and then you move to media and cultural
communication. Okay.
So I wanted to explain to him that being an educationist makes me automatically a mass communicator.
Okay.
But at the same time, I was also a scientist. And I love investigation. I love research. In fact, when I finished the secondary school, I wanted to become a scientific researcher in a research institute. That was really my target. But then I ended up studying biology and physiology, and then finally become a graduate assistant in the Department of Education. And I continued along that line. Methodology, scientific methodology, using scientific methodology in order to conduct researches in various aspects of education. Until 1997, when I became appointed or promoted professor of science education. I was the first person from Kano State to become appointed a professor of science education.
The first person in Kano State?
In Kano.
You mean in the
but
indigenous
not the first,
of Kano?
It's an indigenous of Kano.
Okay.
But even then, at that time, there wasn't anybody in science education. I was the only one. Because science education was not a particularly popular area.
Okay. In the whole university?
In the whole university. But then the university wasn't all that big, was it? I mean, it was a very small university. It's a very small liberal
arts. Is it here in the old side or...
It's at the old campus, because at that time they didn't have the new campus. The new campus was only created, I think, around 1990 or 89 or so. But that 1997, I became a professor of science education. And according to the labor regulations at that time, you retire when you reach the age of 65, if you're an academician. At that time, when I became a professor of science education, I was 41. And I calculated that if I stay in the same area, I will have about 24 years
more,
if God wills, before I retire.
Okay.
It was then I realized that I have no intention of spending the rest of my life in the same area. I felt I have done what I could have done. I still love science. I love science teaching. I love teaching kids. But I felt that I now need to use my skills that I have learned in investigation and moved to another area, and this time my personal area that I am really interested in. It's like I'm saying, now I have learned how to become a researcher. I have been endorsed as a researcher. How can I use my skills as a researcher in another field? And what field shall I pick up? Let me pick up a field that I am personally interested.
Sorry, before we move on to the field that you choose maybe to pick, you became a professor of science education in 1997. Don't you think leaving that particular department create a serious vacuum that maybe they need somebody like you?
I didn't leave the department. I was still there.
Okay.
It's not like in 1997, after I became a professor, I left.
Okay.
I was still there, still teaching. And in fact, I didn't leave the department until October 2012, officially. But then, even then, I didn't leave the department until 25th April 2013, when I reached the age of 57. That's when I officially left the department and moved to my new department. So, when I acquired that particular endorsement, I decided to use whatever skill that I have learned as a scientist, as an investigator, into an area that now is my own, that I'm very, very passionate about, without any inkling or any thinking that it might lead to something. At the time in 1997, I had no intention or no thought of mass communication as a discipline. I felt I have reached the further that I could reach as a scientist in my area. And I like it's like I'm saying, okay, let me toy around with another field and let's see. It's like an intellectual exercise. Let me try another field and see what else I could do. But not because I really want promotion or anything out of it. So that is when I decided to move into the area of media and cultural communication, because I have always been interested in popular culture. And my interest in popular culture is in various areas, in music, in literature, and in films. In music, I even had a guitar. Personal guitar. I could play the guitar very amateurishly. I'm not a professional. But I had a guitar that is called ukulele kind of guitar. Ukulele means an acoustic guitar from Hawaii area. And it was my father, Dr. Muhammad Ubado, who actually purchased the guitar for me. And that was around 1968-69 when he gave me that guitar. And at that time, I think I was about 13 years old or something.
1968-69.
And so my father encouraged me a lot in acquisition of musical taste, because we used to listen to the same kind of music together. So I had this interest in music. My father was also widely read, even though he was an Arabicist. I mean, he studied history, but he has a huge number of books on literature. So I was able to see the books. At that time, I didn't even understand what they were, but books of literature, Shakespeare, Walt Whitman, and all the other poets and so on, were in his library, and I was reading them when I was a kid, growing up in Dunedin. Films were very, very popular with us. My father allowed me to go to cinema in order to watch English films. And the cinema closest to us at that time was the Palace Cinema. So I used to go to
Palace. The one located around Jakarta?
Around Jakarta area, because I came from Dunedin. Okay. So Dunedin and Palace are not
Dunedin,
very far.
Mandori around?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dunedin area. Okay. So it was very easy for me to walk to the cinema.
Okay.
But I only watch English films. I hated Indian films. I never watched Indian films. And sometimes they have what they call double feature. So they will have an English film followed by an Indian film. After they finish the English film, I'll just walk out. I have no interest whatsoever. So right from childhood, there had been this interest at a personal level in popular culture. So in 1997, I was 41 years old. Then I said, okay, now let me use all the skills of investigation.
That is the carryover experience of life.
Or what we now call karai.
Okay.
Karai. Yeah, what we call karai. I mean, you have missed something, some portion of your life.
Yes.
And now suddenly you have an opportunity to look at it, so we call it karai.
Okay.
And now, but there was a catalyst.
Okay.
It wasn't just 1997, and therefore let me just move into popular culture. That was something that happened.
Okay.
At that particular time, house novelists, what they call Soyeya novelists, were gaining a lot of media attention, particularly from Islamic scholars who were accusing them of corrupting the minds of youth.
Yeah.
Because they claim that the novels are all about love, and therefore they are giving a template for youth to become unruly and immoral and so on. And that was what caught my interest, because I remember some of the scholars coming up on the radio and talking about it. And then I remember also some of the scholars arguing that children failed their examination because they were abusing reading novels. And that was the catalyst.
Okay.
Now I'm an educationist. And somebody is telling me that somebody is failing examination because he has written novels. And then I remember when I was in secondary school, I read almost every novel that I could lay my hands on. James Hadley Chase, Harold Robin, and all these writers were writers whose works I devoured, and I never failed my examination.
Okay.
So why are you arguing now that children reading Soyeya novels fail their examinations when there are other factors that lead to the failure of examination. Okay. Self-motivation is one.
Okay.
Lack of proper teachers, okay. Lack of horary, lack of adequate attention, and so on. These are so many factors.
Sir,
that
by implication, you are not of the view that maybe reading all these kind of novels or all this Facebook to go and so on and so forth are contributing toward the total failure of the student when it comes to the issue of education.
If reading a novel can corrupt your mind, that I can assure you that almost everybody who works in Gidam Murtala, which represents the civil service, everybody who works in Gidam Murtala will have been corrupt by now, because I'm telling you, I'm very sure almost everyone in Gidam Murtala has read James Hadley Chase. James Hadley Chase was a writer of crime novels, very small portable novels that almost everybody in the 60s, 70s, and almost into 80s read. They didn't become thieves, they didn't become burglars, they didn't become murderers just because they read those things. So it's a myth to say that reading a particular novel or reading a particular book can make you bad, or watching a particular film can make you bad because of what Anthony Giddens called agency, a concept within you that prevents you from becoming bad, which we have discussed in many of our programs. So I didn't believe that kids fail their examinations because of their overriding obsession with Soyeya novels. So I decided to investigate are these Soyeya novels? How are they manufactured? How are they produced? How are they distributed? What is their audience? And that was the beginning of my interest in media and cultural communication. The first person I talked to was Ado Ahmed Girandabino, who was the very, very famous writer of the novels at that particular time. And so we started with Ado Ahmed Girandabino. I interviewed him. And then the center of production of those novels at that time was City Business Center, CBC, which is located close to Sahad Stores in Deneji, which is run by Alhaji Abba Law in Deneji, who happens to be Meongwa Deneji, a very close friend of mine. We grew up together. And I was very happy when he told me that it was his business center that produces all these novels. So I had an opportunity to discuss with his operators, particularly Sunusu Burhan. And so, based on all that, I wrote an article called Hausa Literature in the 1990s. It is not an academic article. It's just simply an article of on-spot investigation. And I sent it to a newspaper called New Nigerian Weekly, which at that time had a literary column, which was edited by Ibrahim Shemi.
Okay.
Ibrahim Shemi published that article. And if there's any person whom I could say launched me into the area of media and cultural communication, it was Ibrahim Shemi.
Okay.
Because I don't know him.
Okay.
He probably knew me, but I don't know him at all. But he published it, and that was somewhere around 1999. So from 1997 to 1999, I became immersed in trying to understand the popular culture trends in Kano.
Okay.
And after I had done all that investigation, I wrote that first article, which was published in 1990, in New Nigerian Weekly by Ibrahim Shemi.
Okay. Listeners, for those of you that just tuned in, you are onto your program Media and Society, where Professor is answering one of the interesting questions on why he finds himself, or who, as an educationist, how of a sudden, for instance, he finds himself in a media and cultural communication. Meanwhile, we take some break. When we come back, we continue. Welcome back. Yes, before the commercial break, Professor is discussing or citing example of how he find himself into the issue of let's say media and cultural communication, and he's citing example of Ibrahim Shemi. Professor, you can continue from where we stopped.
Yes, that article published by Ibrahim Shemi opened up the floodgates. And the next thing I know, there are a lot of people saying, oh, this is very good.
Okay.
This is the first time
there's reaction.
Academician. Yeah, a reaction in the newspapers. There was no internet at that time. This is the first time somebody from the academic community is saying we are doing something good.
Excellent.
I wasn't saying they were doing something good. I was saying there was nothing bad in what they were doing.
Okay.
Because the criticism so far, up to that particular point, was that the novels are bad, They are badly written. There was no grammar. They are badly printed, badly published and distributed. And most importantly, the content of the novels was very bad because it was immoral, because it's talking about love. And Hausa society does not like to talk about love. It just pretends that love does not exist. It's in denial. So if you love somebody, just show it to them, but don't write it out and start saying it. One of the reactions I received is from somebody who deeply respected me, who is now a professor, Ibrahim Malumfashi. Ibrahim Malumfashi belonged, if you like, to the other side. Ibrahim Malumfashi was saying, no, this is wrong. Ibrahim Malumfashi, at that time, was doing his PhD studies in Hausa language, but was focused on literary history, particularly with a focus on Abubakar Imam's works. He was analyzing Magana Jariche from its original sources and how it was translated back into Hausa language and Magana Jariche. So Ibrahim Malumfashi was at the center of the criticism against the novels. And out of the blues, I came up and said, these novels are okay. And then that, we started all this catfight. And everybody thought I and Ibrahim Malumfashi were rivals or we are enemies or something.
Exchanging ideas.
It's just exchanging ideas. It was a debate. It was a very, very lively debate. In fact, Ibrahim Shemi created a column called the Soyeye Debate, the Great Soyeye Debate. And that's when everybody jumped on the bandwagon. Some people come and say, this is a very good idea. Other people come and say, this is a very bad idea. So, and then it kept on and on and on and on. Then later on, I discovered that a lot of the novelists have become filmmakers. People like Bala Anas Babil Lata, Adu Ahmed Gidendevi, Haja Bala Raba Ramat Yaqub, Dang Azam Baba Chedda, Yangurasa, they have all become filmmakers. That's when I started shifting my focus to film studies. And then years later, the musicians came along, and I've always been interested in music. And then I started studying musical studies. So that is how
apart from the film, you engage interested.
And then I moved into also music. So I started with literature, and then I moved to film. And in film studies, we actually got to a point where we were able to organize an international conference on Hausa video films in 2003. That was 10 years ago. And that conference was the first conference on video film industry in the whole of Africa.
In the whole of Africa?
Not in Nigeria, but in the whole of Africa.
Who is the organizer? I mean,
we organized it.
Okay.
We created something called Center for Horticultural Studies, which no longer exists. We organized it, and it was the first. And we attracted people from all over the world. People came because at that time there was a lot of interest in it. One of the people who attended that conference was called Matthias Kring, a German professor. So when he went back to Germany and he told his professor about the debate about Hausa literature and Hausa film, particularly the censorship that was created in 2001 in order to combat again immorality in Hausa films, I received an invitation to go to Germany to present a paper, and that was the beginning. And from that time in 2004 when I went to Germany, to this year, 2013, I've attended about 32 conferences outside Nigeria, and about 25 conferences in Nigeria and other parts of Africa.
All on the issue of media,
and cultural communication. There is a lot of interest in it. There is a lot of interest in seeing how young Africans now retranslate and use media as a form of reflection, as a form of identity, how they reaffirm their identity through media, whether it is literature, music, or novel. There's a lot of interest in seeing how international flows and counter flows of media from the West or from the East converge into Africa and create a new forms of subjectivities and representation. So that is the secret.
So with all this effort you made, attending conferences, creating avenue for debate, and so on and so forth, how at the end of the day you find yourself as a dual professor, for instance?
Okay, so every time I go out there, I present a paper. And I have so far written and presented about 45 papers in the area of media and cultural communication. And I have only 50 papers in the area of education. So you see, I've almost caught up with my education output. Then last year, I was given an opportunity, or I was appointed as a visiting professor at the University of Warsaw in Poland, specifically on media and cultural communication by European Union. And I taught at the University of Warsaw for 3 years, I mean for 3 months, exactly 100 days. And I was teaching transnationalism and African popular culture and folklore and a lot of stuff like that. When I returned from Warsaw, my vice-chancellor, Professor Abubakar,
here in Bayer University,
Professor Abubakar Rashid, met me, and I went to him to report that I have returned from my research leave at the University of Warsaw. And he said, "Good. Now, can you go and bring all your publications in this area
and bring them to me? Media and culture."
Yes, and bring them to me.
Okay.
So I said, "Okay." I don't know what he wanted. All I wanted, I collected all of them and I brought it to him. And the next thing I know, he said, "Bring your CV." And I brought a CV. And then he just presented the idea to the university of appointing me as a professor of media and cultural communication. But that has to go through the process. So the Department of Mass Communication, where I have been teaching since 2005 on a part-time basis, because the Department of Mass Communication became aware of my travels all over when I returned from Germany. And Germany is the country that has been inviting me over and over. I've been to Germany almost 7 times.
Okay.
So Dr. Umar Farouk, who is now the Commissioner of Information, with Malam Ghosu Ahmed, decided to employ me on a part-time basis in the department. Well, to be frank with you, even at that time, I wasn't even teaching media and cultural communication. I was teaching internet, online, journalism, and all that. But then later on, I moved into film studies and so on. So I was already a staff of the Department of Mass Communication on a part-time basis. And when I returned, the Vice Chancellor asked the department to look at my case, and the department approved it. It was taken to the Faculty of Social and Management Sciences, which also approved it. And then the university said, "We are going to send these publications for assessment as a professor." And the assessment came back positive, and on 30th January 2013, the Vice Chancellor phoned to inform me that I have now been appointed as a professor of media and cultural communication. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Listeners that sent this question, this is how Professor finds himself into a media and cultural communication. And is the only dual professor I think we have in the Bayer University, Kano. On behalf of the producer of this program, Nafisa Murtala Amar, and the head of the program, Amar Tijanela, it has been Murtala Elias Oyagi saying thanks for listening.